Translation. First of all, in the beginning of the creation, there were the four unmarried sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, who, being situated in the vow of celibacy, underwent severe austerities for realization of the Absolute Truth. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The creation of the material world is effected, maintained, and then again annihilated at certain intervals. So, there are different names of the creation in terms of the particular types of Brahma, the father of the living beings in the creation. The Kumaras, as above mentioned, appeared in the Kumara creation of the material world and to teach us the process of Brahman realization. They underwent a severe type of disciplinary action as bachelors. These Kumaras are empowered incarnations, and before executing the severe type of disciplinary actions, all of them became qualified Brahmins. This example suggests that one must first acquire the qualifications of a Brahmin, not simply by birth, but also by quality, and then one can undergo the process of Brahmin realization. Saiva pratanam deva komaram saragamnashritaha chachara dushtaram brahma brahmacharyam akanditam. First of all, in the beginning of creation, there were the four unmarried sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, who, being situated in the vow of celibacy, underwent severe austerities for realization of the Absolute Truth. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Omnitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pistaya Bhutale Srimati Shivaram Swami Itinamani. Glorious to Srila Prabhupada. So, Hare Krishna. I'm always filled with trepidation when I do the Bhagavatam because, well, so many becauses. But, I'm not going to get into how fallen I am because I'm pretty sure you must all know. But it's just when you study the Bhagavatam verse, then you think, what am I going to say? And then you think, how much of this is coming from a sincere place in you? How much is it, real, honest, heartfelt? Is it just a show? I've been a musician for I don't know if you can call the drummer a musician, but for many years, and so it's a lot about performance. And I would like to be able to do a class without performance, but it seems that some or other performance doesn't seem to want to leave me. So I guess I'm just hanging on to that as my hope for saying something useful. But by your blessings and your mercy and prayers, I'm sure I can be sure of something that you won't kick me aside for what I have to say or what I don't say today or should have said. So just going, the story, I think, of when the Pandavas were in exile and Bhima got caught by a python, and it must have been some strong python because he could hold Bhima, who's the strongest character around, with the strength of 10,000 elephants. And he wouldn't let him go, and Yudhisthira Prabhu came by, and Yudhisthira Maharaj came by. And he said to him, please let him go, we'll find something else for you to eat. And the python wouldn't let him go. And so they did a deal that the python, because he was Nahusha in a previous life, and he was offensive to the Brahmins, and he got a curse. He was very proud in his kingly, heavenly state, and he got a curse to become a snake. But and he got this opportunity then to meet Yudhisthira Maharaj. Yudhisthira Maharaj answered questions, as he did similarly to when they were poisoned at the lake. And was able to set him free. And they were talking about the qualities of the Brahman and asking him questions of that. And one of the aspects of the talk, it was a fascinating talk, as you can imagine. But the Yudhisthira was pointing out the truthfulness, generosity, forbearance, good conduct, total absence of cruelty, self-control and compassion. These are the qualities of the Brahmins. That was... God, you know, when you look through that, I think, oh my goodness, what have I got? I don't, if you do that sometimes, look through and think, oh, I haven't got that one, or I haven't got this, or, oh, I think I've got that one. But most of them I haven't got. And I suppose it's a good thing to think that we haven't got them, but the fact is that it's very likely that we don't yet. But we're in the mercy movement. We're in, actually, the leader of our movement really is Lord Nityananda, and all the gurus that have represented him have been pretty much in that mood of compassion and of allowing, you know, they're allowing us to do so many things, like Srila Prabhupada would allow his disciples to come back, and he would not just allow them to come back when they'd fallen down, but reinstate them, which is an incredible thing when you think about it. You know, if sometimes we see someone as off or doing something wrong, especially if they're in a position of power or influence, you know, we're not very keen on having their association or having them order us around and stuff like that. But you know, we're not on that level where we have that kind of forbearance and generosity. Anyway, so that was just one point I wanted to make about the Brahmins. And then Brahman realization, of course, is another thing in itself. And the Kumaras were Brahman realized until they got that wonderful opportunity to meet with Lord Vishnu. So what I've done today, because I find that I can I can go deeper into something if I write about it. And so I know that poetry can be sometimes a bit trying on people's ears, you know, and when there's poems up on the Facebook, you know, people are not so happy to read them, even though it might be nice stuff. I find that when I can't understand something, I have to write a poem about it. Or if I appreciate something, I have to write a poem about it. And so I can say, because, you know, then there's a chance that Super Soul might just come in and give us something, some realizations and some understanding. Whereas if you ask me a question right now, you know, I just it would be a kind of more off the top of my head type of answer. Whereas poetry is a more of a meditative mode that seems to, you know, seems to help me. So I thought I would just kick off with the one about the Bhagavatam, because it's the Bhagavatam that's actually saving us. Since I got ill last year, I increased my reading of Bhagavatam. In fact, you could say I started it. I've gone through it some or other, one time or other, by checkered history of Krishna consciousness. And I've read it in inverted commas. And, you know, since I was speaking to His Holiness Jananda Maharaj yesterday, and talking about, you know, realizations or lack of them that I have or had since then, and I understood that I'm really back at square one. My memory is got worse this year, I think, through what happened to me, and so, you know, I'm not so good on that. And then my ability to really be honest with myself about where I'm at, and you know, who I am. That's kind of increased, you know, in the sense of being honest about myself more and more, because I have to be if I want to go back to Godhead, which I do. So, you know, I'm trying to read the Bhagavatam and appreciate it more and more. Not that any of the other books are any less, but so then last night I wrote a couple of, I've written a couple of poems today about the Kumaras, who are just such incredible personalities, and I hadn't really appreciated them. Not that I do now, but I'm trying. And then I thought, just before I went to bed last night, oh my God, the Bhagavatam, you know, it's saving us, and its recitation, as it says, is, can destroy almost every nonsense in us. So I just wrote something a little briefly about Bhagavatam, which you know, I'm going to just read for you. If you could just bathe one's mind with beautiful thoughts of Sri Hari, dress yourself with the raiment of pure simplicity, abandon the costly garments of dark duplicity, scrub your heart with the strong brush of humility, abandon the rabid company of those who bark and bite, fill your ears with words that make your tendering hearts glow bright. Your saviors you will know, for Shabda Praman they will recite, the nectar juice of Bhagavatam they relish day and night. Bathe one's mind with the beautiful, beauteous words of Srimad Bhagavatam. Wash the heart of all the woes it ere long did succumb. Not just once, but go and go and until you have become freed from the contaminating clouds that block the sun. Rise and hear the Bhagavatam, though life has laid you low. Take up your sword of valor, string your forsaken bow. The arrows from your quiver will deliver such a blow that fear will never ever dare his craven face to show. Hear the names of Bhagavan, his places and his deeds. Cheer with jais and hari bols and uproot Maya's weeds. Relish and appreciate each word, a mighty seed, which grows the oak of bhakti that alone fulfills our needs. Bathe one's mind in Bhagavatam, for Hari's names and form precipitate a change so great, a shelter from the storm. Bathe one's mind in Bhagavan, his pastimes pure as snow, and cross samsara's oceans, and to him quickly go. So that kind of set up my feeling about appreciation for Bhagavatam and how I have to get more and more into it. You know, Krishna, Dharma and Chaitanya Chintamani Prabhu, they're always carrying a flag for, you know, reading and hearing and stuff like that. It's such vital. And they, you can see that they've realized it, because they're always happy. And, you know, you see Mother Chintamani in the kirtan, and she's always, if I watch her, which I often do just to see what she's up to, I should be looking at the deities, but I watch, you know, occasionally. And she's always, you know, praying and always look very steadfastly at the deities, and I wonder what's going on in there. So it's great to, if you're stuck with an issue or a problem, you just know who to look around and see who's carrying the answer that day, and just observe them and steal it off them. Because our boss is a faith. So Krishna is the best faith. So we have to be thieves like that. Then my mind turned to the Kumaras and how incredible their story is. You know, how they defied their father at the beginning. You just imagine that. You know, just said, no, we're not doing that. We're not going to create progeny and fill the universe. You know, find someone else to do it. How amazing they were. And then the things that they did and the pastimes that they had were intrinsically and beautifully linked with all the pastimes of or many of the pastimes that the Lord performed in his Purusha avatars, sorry, in the Leela avatars. And so then I wanted to write something about them, and also the story of them. And so again, I hope my computer wants to help me out here with this, but I'd just like to indulge myself again on that, because they are so amazingly connected with the, as I said, the pastimes of the Lord, and they are incomparably wonderful people who give us such a story about our connection or disconnection from the glories of Brahman to the glories of Bhagavan. And so I want to say a little something about them, if that's okay. Lighter than the air they were, the eight cities theirs to behold. They had all the cities. Through spheres and atmospheres they passed, until they reached those doors of gold. So they're going on a beautiful journey to meet Sri Vishnu. No slight conception of yours and mine. They were very innocent. They entered 1, 2, 3, and 4. Their fascination for these climbs increased tenfold with every door. And then, upon the 7th gate, 2 sentinels, four-armed and stout, can't do the forearms, but you can imagine, refuse them entry, brows irate. With massive staffs they kept them out. Deprived of Srihari's sweet sight, their childlike pleasantness dissolved, and in a trice they showed their might, as reddened angered eyes evolved. They heaped a mountain's worth of ire upon the doormen's heads and ears, with cries of indignation's fire, which branded them with burning fear. How could we be an enemy? Vaikuntha has not a single one of these. For all who stay and visit here are pure as morning sun and breeze. Where is the possibility, they're telling him off, of an enemy's intrusion? Our Lord's abode, no enmity, no discord or confusion. And yet, embroiled in needless fuss, impostors both, you could be, he's having a go at J and VJ now, projecting your guilt onto us, when welcome warm we should be. Wherefrom comes your disharmony, your brute contamination? A punishment befittingly should fall for this vexation. And thus the sages cursed the pair to tumble down below, to realms divest of loving prayer, where fools are wont to go. The poor unscorned fell to their knees and begged for clemency, and wondrously their Lord appeared, speaking words of gravity. My dear doorkeepers, Jai and Vijay, the punishment must be 100 births spent far away as my pure devotee. Or you may choose the path of rage, 3 births as my sworn foe. In fighting pastimes we'll engage, then back to me you'll go. And so as demons they were born, forgetful of their past. The universe shook with their scorn. Their might was unsurpassed. The demigods were sore afeared. Please save us, Lord, they screamed. To which a mighty boar appeared with golden mace that beamed. You know who that is, Rangini? Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha, the fearless one, approached Lord Boar, a roaring. Sorry, that was Varade. You swine, this day you'll be undone. Your pig's blood will be pouring. And so in space, they fought for hours. Their mace and swords are ringing. And grateful devas rain down flowers with choirs of angels singing. Varahadev, you mighty lord of space, dispatch this terrifying one with your great golden mace. Varahadev, replete with snow-white mane, and a beautiful white mane, like a horsey does. Glory to you, our sweet lord. Bring back the earth again. The earth had been thrown down into the nether regions. And thus the deed was quickly done. Hiranyaksha's defeat, and soon was planet Earth retrieved and placed within its seat. An order once again restored until his brother's birth. Do you know who Hiranyaksha's brother was, Rangini? Hiranyakashi. Good girl. Poo, she said. And I hope that's not a comment to my class. Until his brother's birth, when Hiranyaksha appeared and terrorized the earth, the three worlds then were plundered as this demon held his sway. His voice of rage he thundered as all they fled away. Brahma's blessing made this fool as near deathless as can be, but Narasingha kept his cool and killed him on his knee. Narasingha, may your name be ever treasured. Narasingha, for your glories can't be measured. Narasingha, from all evil, please protect us. Narasingha, to Sri Krishna, please direct us. O Ram, you were to endure more than a king had ever. Stoically you bore that weight as mountains bear the weather. Ravan and his brother perished as Dharma's usurpers do. Never did a monarch rule as perfectly true as you. Ramachandra, the best of Raghu's race, Kali mourns your absence. This world implores your grace. Again the doormen took their birth when Krishna came to play. Anybody remember who they were? Dantavakra and Shishupal, yeah. Again, the doormen took their birth when Krishna came to play. But Club and Chakra laid them low and stole their lives away. And then again, the pair arrived as Jagai and Madai. I think I'm right in saying this, and this is the fourth rather than the third. They would have both been slain alive if not for precious Nitai, who begged the Lord to spare them. We saw that yesterday, didn't we? It was so moving. For their horrendous crimes, and gave to them the holy names which made their lives sublime. Oh, Nityananda, in rain cloud blue you sway. Make us dance in ecstasy and chant our sins away. Oh, Nityananda, give us Krishna prema and fill our lives with sunshine at chanting of your name. And thus, the four Kumaras were central to this drama and part of why we chant today, Hare Krishna Rama. So, can you see the incredible influence the Kumaras had? And when Narad met the Kumaras, when he met Bhakti Devi, and she was in a very distressed state because her sons, Gyan and Vairagya, were in a mess, because no one in this age is interested in Gyan and Vairagya. And so they were almost dead. And then Narad was asking about this, and then he tried to revive them, Gyan and Vairagya, by chanting. Bhagavad Gita and all the other scriptures. It was incredible. And still they wouldn't awaken up. And then there was a voice in the sky said, go to, was it Badrikashram? Or go up to the Himalayas somewhere and you will find the answer to this. And he went there, and he met the Kumaras again. They were there, and they told him about the Bhagavatam and how it would do everything. It would revive Gyan and Vairagya, and by and it would establish bhakti, and bhakti alone, because actually Gyan and Vairagya are dependent upon bhakti, would it would be a natural symbiotic relationship they have. And so he went and did that, and it all was well. And so the Kumaras are absolutely incredible personalities, and just to think how they must have felt. I know it's in the realms of speculation, but most of this is taken from what I perceived from the Bhagavatam, reading the Bhagavatam yesterday. So I was thinking, what a thrill it must have been for the Kumaras to actually meet Vishnu. You know, and we've seen that beautiful picture where Vishnu is kind of looking all very sort of, you know, kind of flowy and beautiful and sort of like this. And at his feet, there are these little boys, maybe the size of Rangini. Would you like to be little Kumara Rangini? Maybe. Or would you prefer to be a gopi? Gopi, yeah? Anyway, so, yeah, and how the boys were looking at Vishnu, and all their senses were overwhelmed by the smelling of the tulsi. And from Brahman realization, which they'd been preaching for millions of years, Jai, Sisi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. They've been preaching this for millions of years. In fact, it says here, look, they're the four unmarried sons of Brahma, for the realization of the absolute truth. And in the purport, and to teach us the process of Brahman realization. But how lucky we are, we don't have to do that. In fact, we've done it many times. I'm pretty sure many of you have been there and come down because it didn't fulfill, didn't tick all the boxes. You know when that there's a saying that, oh, he ticks all the boxes for me, or this ticks all the boxes for me. You know, a person is completely satisfied with what's been offered. So, Brahman realization does not tick all the boxes. Actually, an interesting story for me. Years ago, when I started to look for God, I was interested in healing and the esoteric side of life. And I went to the Odeon Leicester Square to see Ronald Beasley. He was like one of the foremost psychics on the scene at that time. He could read your aura. He could look at your subtle body, and he could tell where you're at, exactly where you're at, and you know, give you information on that and stuff like that. So I was very fascinated by this. I wanted to see him. So it was incredible, because that place, the Odeon Leicester Square, three things happened to me there. It was a very weird thing. But three things happened to me there, which were to change my life. I went to see Cliff Richard and the Young Ones when I was 14. The Young Ones, darling, we're the Young Ones. That was his big hit. So he had a film called The Young Ones. And so I was 14 and I went to see him do that. And I thought, God, that's what I want to do. I want to be a singer. I want to be in the show business. I want to have everybody scream for me. Oh dear, how wrong I was. But anyway, what to do? So that's that. And then some years later, I saw the film Gandhi. And it was filled with the Indian people. And sorry to say, but they're a little bit non-demonstrative. I was so filled with this, you know, his message, you know, of like non-violence and of seeking for a higher truth. I didn't understand anything about, you know, impersonal Brahman or all that. It was a good man, and he was having a go, you know. And I stood up and I cheered and I was clapping. I looked around and all the Indian people were just sitting there. Yes, very good, very good. Anyway, so that was another big turning point for me. And then the other one was Ronald Beasley. I went to the same place and I saw him, and I definitely wanted to be a healer, you know, and help people, which I've done to an extent for 40 years now. Anyway, what happened was that I was sitting in the audience, and he said, okay, he described the aura, the gross body, and then the subtle body. And then he said, okay, anyone want an aura reading? And someone just in front of me, just a little to the right, put his hand up. So he came straight to me and went, okay, you've got a twin vibration, so you're obviously a twin. And I listened to the guy and went, oh, how did he know that? You know, like, and he says, you're obviously a twin. And then he went right into his life, and he told him all about his stuff. He had these siddhis, you know. Anyway, I was so impressed, and I signed up to go to his place. It was called the White Lodge on the beach in Bexhill or something like that in South England. By the time I got there, he was taking his disciples to India. He'd been away to India. And you know the Indian roads. Sorry, this is not an Indian bashing day today. It's just like, you know, they're like the Russian roads as well after a bad winter. And they're, you know, great big potholes and all this stuff. Anyway, poor thing, he was in a bus and he was standing up, I think, and the bus went over a pothole, threw him up and smashed his head, and it killed him. So he died in India. So by the time I got to Mr. Beasley's place, I decided, well, I'll go anyway. And he had some brilliant, brilliant, heavyweight psychic people there. You know, there really were something else. And at least according to what my understanding was. And I spent a week there, and I learned how to fast and everything, because we did fasting and all kinds of things. And one thing or another. Anyway, so that started me on my sort of healing journey. I learned lots of other things, and then Super Soul showed me lots of other things too. And so what happened was that I just took that as part of my education. I learned this and I learned that, and I went here and I went there, and I've done millions of things. So then finally I found the devotees and started my spiritual education in bhakti in 1984, which I'd like to thank them all for. And anyway, there was a friend of mine who used to go. He's a scientist called Terry Edwards, and he still goes to this foundation. He still goes backwards and forwards, and they've got a lady there called Cicely. She's very heavyweight. Intellectual, they're gyanis, and you know, and Brahmavadis type of people. And she, a couple of years ago, it's only 2 or 3 years ago, I saw Terry, and he said, "Hey, you know, something very interesting. Mr. Beasley is coming back." So he'd gone to Brahman. And that the whole thing was that, you know, about the white light and merging and all that stuff, and that was the ultimate state, which I didn't think was anything wrong with, and I didn't know any better. And he said, "Mr. Beasley is coming back. He's going to come take birth again." So I said, "Why is that? What reason did he give?" He said, "He's bored." And I thought, my God, my hair stood on end. This is what Prabhupada said, like, you know, we're there in the Brahman, and after a while, the soul actually needs, it doesn't really sometimes remember when it's in such a lovely, relaxed, chilled out, no tax to pay, no wife to please, no children to feed mood. It thinks it's great stuff, but after a while, no loving exchange there. So Brahman, and we've been here, we've all been in it. In fact, I can remember as a child saying to my friends, not that I was there in my last life, but I was there sometime. We've all been. And I said to them, "Can you think of nothing?" My friends went, "No." And I said, "I used to ask, can you think of nothing?" And they went, "Well, I don't know, let me see." No, I can't. No. And I was asking everyone, can you think of nothing? And I could. And I used to just lay on my bed sometimes when I was bored and go into this white light and think of nothing. I didn't particularly like it. It was just something to do when there was no apples to steal in the orchard and when it was off season. So I was just... So Mr. Beasley is come back. Hopefully he's come back as a devotee. And he's, you know, exactly what Prabhupada said. You know, sometimes you think, oh, I'm not sure about that. Why should they? Well, you know, here it was, you know, the way that Krishna has to work with me is give me direct. Anyway, back to the Kumaras. Sorry about my stories. So here's the Kumaras. They've just discovered Sri Vishnu. Oh, what pure delight, what wonder we feel. We are torn from our Brahman realization. In one sacred moment, our world is renewed and imbued with a new fascination. The Father of Fathers, Sri Vishnu, has come, rewriting our finalized concept of being. Destroyed in a moment, our proud love of light. Out loud, we his glories are singing. Sanak, see his eyes, the blue lotus is shamed. Sanat Kumar, and what can be said of his fragrance? His lotus nails, rubies, can hardly compare. And the devas appear now as vagrants. Sanatan, Sanandan, what joy upon joy do we feel from each jubilant sense? O dry the papyrus, we write our proud words. O fie on our intelligence. It is you, Lord, 'tis you, Lord, who melts the heart's ice, as proud glaciers are withered and dried, undone by the sun, O you beauteous one, returned to the warmth at your side. We duly supposed that pure light was the goal, forgetting that flames have a source. Now we can see from whom that light springs. Your love takes our senses by force. All doors have been opened to us at our whims. Respect has been shown ere we trod, presuming there was nothing more we could learn. But now we have learned there is God. My brothers, have ever you felt such remorse? For bhakti we never did render. We abandoned our father as a thief flees the crime. So now it is time to surrender. So I guess I'm talking to myself. I don't know if I'm any closer to surrender than I was, you know, 30 odd years ago. And speaking with Maharaj yesterday, I realized that a lot of what I've done and what I am is pretense. But I know underneath that there's someone, something that, you know, that is sincere. I know that there is hope, even though it's a bit of a desolation row when you consider your disqualifications. I don't know if you've ever felt like that yourself, you know, when you think, oh my God, I'm not really good at this, or I didn't do that, or I should have said this, or I shouldn't have said that. But, you know, this introspection, I think I can take it to one point, but at one point a part of me says, stop now, this is miserable. It's not going to get you anywhere if you just keep shooting yourself in the foot. However, we need that introspection, isn't it? We need to get that balance of, you know, honesty, and we need that. But at the same time, we mustn't be too hard on ourselves. Otherwise, we'll get discouraged and go away. You know, because all of us know our stuff. Each one of us knows things that we're not proud of, or things that we wish that we were divest of by this time. But I've realized at least that I can't blame anyone else but me. And this is the perfect arrangement. My life is a perfect arrangement. I couldn't wish for anything better. Whether it be heart attacks, whether it be, you know, people saying bad things, whether it be envious, whether it be lack of this facility or that. We've all got a story and an issue and something that we could quite easily blame our lives or the problems of our lives on, and our lack of advancement. However, I'm not sure that I can change to the degree which is required. But I do know that with Bhagavatam, I do have at least the faith that Bhagavatam will help me, that devotees will help me. if they'll help me, they'll definitely help you. And so I think, bit by bit, we'll get there together. Together we're as strong. There was a book I wrote about children, about positive affirmations for children, because I'm very interested in children these days. You know, I've seen maybe tens of thousands of adult clients over the years, and I like to think that I've helped quite a lot of them by Krishna's grace. But I was thinking the other day, you know, it's easier, even though it's a struggle, to grow a happy, healthy child than to fix a broken adult. So the last couple of years, I've been really working on children and on, you know, ways in which children can be grown, nicely grown, you know. And there was talking about becoming togetherness, and there was one little song. One stick can be broken across a person's knee, but more sticks are impossible to break so easily. I guess what I am saying is I'll be there for you, and I would appreciate it if you could be there too. So I think this togetherness, this working together, this encouraging each other, you know, we both have to give it out, and we have to be ready to, when the time comes, to receive it, not to be too proud. I've always seen myself a bit as a let me give, let me give, let me give. And then some healer friend the other last year when I was sick said, Jayadev, have you ever considered receiving? And I thought, well, of course. And then I thought, no, I'm not very good at receiving. And we have to be. And it's only just pride. It's only pride. I'm the doer. I'm the controller. I'm the giver. And so Krishna just has a few slaps and a few disabling moments to enable us to understand what we're in need of. So any questions or comments before we finish?